Good evening.
Good evening.
So imagine if a flying saucer would land and an alien would step out, friendly guy, and he says, "I've heard a lot about Earth. Or here it's a good place, and you have some really wonderful things here, and I'm glad to be here." And I've heard about the various fruit that you have. I'm anxious to try the fruit. And I'm most interested in your bananas. What's a banana? So how would you describe a banana to somebody who didn't know anything about bananas? How would you describe a banana? And probably the first thing that would come to your mind is, you'd say, "Oh well, it's yellow." That's the first thing. And you say, "Well, you know, it's kind of firm. It's solid and firm, pretty good." And oh, by the way, also it's smooth, slender, very good. And those are characteristics of what a banana appears to be. And when we describe anything, bananas or anything, we always, of course, talk about their physical qualities and their appearances. But inherently, the inherent nature of a banana is not its yellowness. Because the yellowness of a banana is just one characteristic of its protective quality. And so, because of its protective qualities, it feels firm. So its smoothness and its yellowness and its firmness, that's just appearances. But the life-giving quality of a banana, as you know, is in its whiteness and its softness, and that part of the banana that you can't see when you first look at it. The true nature of a banana is in its softness, which is beyond its initial appearance. And so it is with us. And our practice should be like that. Our practice is to see ourself and all living things beyond their appearances. Our practice and our way of seeing through our practice goes beyond the skin, which is meant to protect and is meant to be tough. However, fundamentally, we are soft and we are flexible. And so our true strength is not on the outside. It's not external. Our true strength is not what we put on display to the world. Our true strength is in our life-giving quality, like the whiteness of the banana. So our practice is about understanding and acknowledging our fundamental self, and not be misled by some kind of outer protective skin. This is our practice. So we learn to practice flexibility and openness and vulnerability in our life. And this is how we express our true self, our fundamental giving self. our softness and our flexibility gives life to all of our activities and to all of our relationships. Our inherent softness gives life to life. But when we fall into the habit of holding on to appearances, it's because we fear our softness. In other words, we fear of giving ourselves. We fear of pulling off that outer skin. Because we think there is something to lose if we take off the skin, or maybe we feel threatened. So what happens is, when we have this fear, we develop a certain hardness to life, because we are protecting a small self. But all of this is simply a trick of the ego. And it is our greatest delusion. And it results in our misunderstanding ourselves. So the skin of the banana, or of anything, is to protect the inside. Skin is to protect what's inside. But there is no need to protect our true self. No need. No need to protect our true self with appearances or with the skin of the ego. Our true self is never threatened. It is the ego that feels in need of protection. So fundamentally, the appearances of the things of our life are not firm like a banana peel. The appearances of things and people that we see are kind of a skin. They can protect, but they are vulnerable. If you take the protective part of the banana away, if you take the peel of the banana away from the body, the peel then becomes very soft and flexible, and it cannot stand up by itself. So our inherent softness is not a weakness. Our inherent softness is our strength. Our inherent softness is how we stand up. So the firmness of the fruit is in the soft inner part, in its life-giving part. A firmness on the outside is okay, but let's not mistake it for our true self. So we shouldn't be misled by stories of tough guys or tough women. Buddha, as we read, was very firm. Firm and strong. But he was not a tough guy. He was not tough. The same with everybody in the lineage of our practice, Tozan and Dogen, Suzuki Roshi. They were firm, but they were soft-hearted. And they gave life. All of them were firm, but they stood up because of their softness. Our true self stands up. Our true self can never fall down. So Dogen, when he was in China, he asked his Chinese teacher, Nyojo, he said, "What is emancipation from body and mind?" And Nyojo said to him, "Emancipation from body and mind is Zazen." And this point we should study with our whole life. His answer was very important for us. Emancipation from body and mind is Zazen. And it means that our effort in life is to dedicate our whole body and mind to each and every activity. To dedicate our whole body and mind means to let go of a whole body and mind. Let go of ideas of ourself. In other words, emancipation of body and mind is to see beyond appearances. So we feel our oneness with everything. So here is a part of a Dogen, part of Dogen's writing in his famous Shobogenzo. And this chapter is called The Roar of a Dragon. One day, great master Jisai of Mount Tosu in Joshu was asked by a monk, "Does an old withered tree roar like a dragon or not?" The master replied, "Even in my Buddhist way, a skull proclaims the law. In my Buddhist way, even a skull proclaims the law." Then Dogen says, "Non-believers say that an old withered tree is just an old withered tree, and ashes are only ashes. There is a great difference between the opinions of non-believers and those of the Buddhas and patriarchs. Non-believers discuss the concept of a withered tree, but they do not know what it really is. Much less do they understand the roar of a dragon. Non-believers think that a withered tree is a dead tree and will not have foliage next spring." So, Dogen is a little tricky. If we approach him by, you know, with our thinking mind, if you try to analyze what he said, you will say, "A skull roars like it." No, that's not logical. That can't happen. That's impossible. So we cannot approach, we cannot try to fathom or understand the world according to Dogen and the Buddhas and the patriarchs with the thinking mind. We have to understand in another way. So Nyojo told Dogen, "Emancipation is Zazen." When we sit in Zazen, we are never, ever alone. Even if we are by ourselves, even if you're on your cushion by yourself, here in the Zendo or at home or somewhere, never alone. And if you think, "I'm sitting alone," then you're really saying, "I'm just an old withered tree." to sit alone is to roar like a dragon. To say that a withered tree has no life is a misunderstanding. Even an old, dried out skull is roaring like a dragon. So the entire universe is in Zazen when you are in Zazen. Even when you are alone. And when we forget this point or don't feel this point, then our sitting becomes difficult. And doubts arise, and resistance arises. So we tell ourselves, just go ahead. Whether you are alone or in company, when you're sitting, you just go ahead. And little by little, you come to appreciate that you're never alone. And you will say to yourself, everything is sitting. I will join them. So when you come to this place, Zendo, and you find it empty, and you say, no one is here. That's its appearance. But the Zendo, even though it's empty, is roaring like a dragon all the time. And when it is empty, you may say, well, it's like a withered tree. But then pretty soon, there's fruit. So it becomes difficult to sit if we just see ourselves as just ourselves. To see ourselves just as ourselves, as only ourselves, is to see ourselves as a banana. And when we see things in a limited way like that, we see life only as appearances with a protective cover. So when we see things that way, we have a hard time coming to Zazen. We will resist giving of ourself, and we will lose a big opportunity. So we have to see ourself as not self, to be emancipated from. Body and mind. When that happens, we are no longer a banana with a protective skin. Does anyone have a question? Yes, Ross.
I was curious, the quote you read sounded very much like something Jesus could have said, that the believers think this way and the non-believers think this way. What do you think he meant by the word belief? for the believers.
The believers? Oh. He's referring to those people who are stuck in a habitual way of doing things and don't have a flexibility to see things in new ways.
So in that sense, belief implies a way of seeing?
It may, to the believer, it may feel like a way of seeing. But if there is stubbornness in that belief, then it is not seeing. It's just believing without reflection, without open mind. Or, as Roshi would say, without beginner's mind. And you know, in one of his talks, he said, I have found that it's absolutely necessary to believe in nothing. Thank you. Dave.
I really appreciate your parable of the banana. I think that's very enlightening, instructive. Not only the sweet, soft inner core of the banana compared to the outer peel, but the fact that when we have the banana in our hands and it feels so smooth and hard and rigid, that comes from the inner core, which we later find to be so soft and sweet. But pursuing this analogy a little further, when one eats a banana, one peels it, and then this floppy, unstructured peel becomes a sort of a worthless thing that is thrown on the ground for people to slip on, leading to innumerable banana peel jokes and so forth. And in the same way, a lot of people, when they first come to our practice, think that it's about devaluing and despising and suppressing and destroying the small self, the ego identity, as opposed to simply finding the true nature that can be obscured by that. So I'm reminded of a wonderful video from Jane Goodall's chimpanzees. There's a wonderful video of one of these chimpanzees eating a banana. And he very carefully, just like a human, he's peeling the banana. And the banana is so sweet, and he's eating the banana. And finally, when he's consumed and appreciated the banana, and there's nothing left but the floppy peel, he looks down at it, and he eats that too. I think this chimpanzee had a great understanding of the harmony of difference and equality.
Good. Thank you, Dave. Is that on YouTube?
Everything else is.
Yes, please, Motoko.
If you could explain again why inside doesn't get hurt, that would be helpful.
We have to understand that it's not a matter of inside or outside. If we see our true nature, our true self, as if it were the inside of some fruit, then we fear that it will get hurt. But our true self, our larger self, is beyond inside and outside. And when we go beyond limits of inside and outside, nothing can be hurt. There's no such thing as hurt. So it's a matter of appreciating who we are inherently. We are inherently neither inside nor outside. Yes, please.
What I have understood is that for a long time, tough guys have been disabandoned by most religions as opposed to more firm guys. Like, a lot of places we value firm guys over tough guys, but tough guys are still around. Like, the popularity of tough guys are not going away, as we see in Hollywood movies. So, what makes them stick around? Why we're not getting rid of tough guys altogether?
If we are if we think of certain people as someone to get rid of, we never get rid of. Tough guys are no longer tough guys when we accept them for who they are and not be frightened by their so-called toughness. If we accept everybody who they are as who they are, then there's no more tough guys. But if we are at war with them and try to get rid of them, it's impossible. Thank you. Okay. Are there any announcements tonight? Yes, Umar. So next.